Well, thanks for coming out. I'm sorry I'm late. I blame the Cleveland Marathon. So getting down here was actually kind of a pain in the neck. Beth and I navigated. We had to took us like an hour and a half to actually break through the marathon and get on this side of it. I'm super tired, so I'm going to drink some coffee.
Does breakthrough mean killing marathon runners?
No, we didn't actually kill any marathon runners. I definitely admire them, right? They're running 26 miles. That's pretty awesome.
In the rain.
I certainly couldn't do that. And anyway, so... And really, I'm proud of them and I'm happy for them. It was unexpected. I'm also extremely, extremely tired and very unfocused, so I'm really sorry about that. So the purpose of this talk is basically that, the purpose of this talk is pretty simple, that basically a number of the good tool authors out there are either gainfully employed and too busy to write new tools or are too scared to write new tools, and we need a new crop of new writers out there. So in theory, it could be any one of you. I hope it is. So I work with Doug, right? So Doug Song has written some cool tools, and in fact, one of his libraries, and contributed to another one of them. And people are always asking him for new tools and stuff like that. So just write your own damn tools, essentially. That's kind of the whole point of this thing. I originally was going to talk about libevent, but I'm glad I'm not, because talking with Marius a few minutes ago, it turns out I don't know all the internals as well as I should to talk about it. I'm going to talk kind of about APIs, actually. I'm not a programmer by trade. I just play one on TV, so just keep that in mind, too. So the three libraries I'm going to talk about deal with packets. So libdnet is a packet construction library and a network layer manipulation library that Doug Song wrote, basically to replace libnet for some of his own use and kind of pick up a lot of the work he had thrown together and a lot of other stuff. You can construct and send packets at either the IP layer or the Ethernet layer. You can change the ARP table and the routing table and the kernel and stuff like that. You can also build and insert firewall rules and remove them and stuff like that. Really pretty cool API. Libpcap is the standard way of capturing packets on the in a portable way. You can do it in a platform-specific way. Dude, feedback. Turn it down. Anyway, so if you want to write code that's going to capture packets, you can easily just write it in pcap, and almost anyone out there can use it. It took me a little bit to get the understanding of how it's supposed to work, and then once I did, it was really, really easy. And libnids is also pretty dead easy as well. It's an IP stream reassembling library based on the Linux 2036 stack, I think it is. He basically took it and abstracted it in user land, and you have a really simple event-driven way to basically capture and build streams and play with them as you want to. What's nice about all these libraries is, like I said, is that they're portable. So you can run them on Windows. I run them on BSD. You can run them on Linux. You can run them on OS X. You can run them on Windows even. There's a few quirks, of course, in Windows, and there's a single quirk on OS X that I know of that's kind of crazy. KQ is broken for reading packets in BPF. So on OS X. Again, why should you guys write your own tools, and why should you encourage others to write their own tools, as opposed to waiting for monkeys and such to write tools? I think I got Lorene up here cracking up. But So Marius is a monkey, right? So Marius is there in the Michigan sweatshirt, and he writes some really damn cool tools, essentially because he has to meet some of these things, right? He needs tools that have a certain flexibility for him that work really well. He's working on a really cool library right now about portable networking stuff, so basically kind of a portable networking configuration library so you can wander the planet like he does and always find network and make use of it, which is really cool. I think it's called AutoNet. It's really cool stuff. There's the flexibility aspect of it, right? So exactly that, right? So Marius's needs were not met by anybody else's tools very well, and so why not write your own tool set to work on it? You have also this private stash of tools that no one can basically take away from you. So if Pachyderm goes down, right, where's your sniffer? Well, write your own damn sniffer, essentially. Then you have to worry about the law in some places. France, I think, recently passed a law regarding tools and stuff like that. It's kind of murky so far, but, you know, woe be to the guy who finds out the wrong way, the hard way, that it's not fair to people who just write tools for whatever use. And obviously you want to develop some skills so you can get a job or whatever, make some money or impress people, stuff like that. So in a nutshell, you too can be the next Doug Song. right? So Doug's well known for writing cool creative tools and stuff like that. I'm going to talk about the C APIs, the C language APIs for all of these, but they're all available in a bunch of other languages. Python is really popular as well among a lot of hackers these days. Represent. Python's really nice, actually. I like Python a lot. I'm learning a lot more about better programming techniques in Python, and it's a really easy way to do it. So C++ is one way to do it. Python's another way to do it. It's easy to do the easy things, pretty easy to do the complicated things, and you can really get very interesting programming out of it. So people have built bindings for PCAP, for libnids, and for libdnet. Doug's actually got Python bindings for libdnet exported in the library. Tickle, if you want a really simple, dead easy to use language, use Tickle. It's pretty easy to use. It's kind of hard sometimes to do the complicated stuff, but it's really easy to do the dead easy stuff. Cliff Flint's got bindings for libdnet. There's a Tickle PCAP interface I wrote. I think somebody else wrote some other ones. I wrote mine for work, so I can't release it yet, but working on it. But the basic principle is just swig it up, and using swig, the software, the scripting language interface generator, it's an automated way to basically build Perl, Tickle, whatever bindings, C-sharp bindings even, to a bunch of C libraries, and C++ libraries. Really, really easy to do. So you can basically just export the interface and for PCAP or for anything else into Tickle, because not enough networking programmers use Tickle. A lot of them use Perl, though. I have a personal thing against Perl, but that's a different story. I'm rambling, I know. I'm tired and unfocused. But a lot of people like Perl, which is nice. So there's a lot of models out there written for Perl, for PCAP, for libdnet, for libnids, and stuff like that. I think Paul's a big Perl head. Not anymore? A common sentiment about Perl. I use it, but I don't like it. Anyway, so obviously, when you use an interpreted language like Python or something like that, your performance is typically going to be less than a natively compiled interface, like a natively compiled program, typically, not always. But you have rapid development cycles. You have much more reusable code. Typically, you don't need to generate packets or capture packets at this mad, insane rate, or deal with events kind of at a crazy rate. So you can get by with the trade-off of performance at runtime versus the development time. So you can, in 5 lines of Python, for example, you can have Mac OF, or you can try and write in 100 some odd lines of C code or something like that. It's way easier to debug. So I tend to mix the two a lot. So I have C libraries exported to scripting languages like Tickle and Python, stuff like that. A lot of these libraries are actually built around the event-based model. They can be threaded, but they're based around the event-based model. So threading is a typical way that people try and get high-performance code, spawn an ass load of threads, and have each of them handle tasks and sort of parallel and work with it that way. But debugging that's a real pain in the neck. You've got deadlock issues. You try and track what threads opened what file descriptor, what state it's in, and stuff like that. All sorts of crazy things. I hate debugging threading code, but you learn some strange things that way. You got to protect memory, for example, in strange ways. All these crazy things you have to do in threading that you don't have to do in event stuff. So in event-based code, the idea is you have one main loop, and you loop over typically a series of file descriptors that you read to and write from, or you look for signals that got set, and you basically look for events that have happened. Either data became available to read, or data you can now write to data. You got a signal or a timer happened, or the four main kinds of things you're looking for in event-based code. So you loop over them, and then you can use like select or pull. You can use KQ on BSD and Mac OS X, and EPOL on Linux is one of them as well. So Linux is actually kind of, it sounds like talking to Mara, it sounds like Linux is actually working in a lot of ways to kind of clean up the availability of certain options in event-based code design. SIGFD is something he described to me a few minutes ago. It sounds really cool in Linux. But the idea is that at any one time, you're only processing one event. And so in debugging it, you don't have this massively parallel problem. You just have one thing. You can trace back, for example, the file descriptor that you're reading on if it crashes or whatever, and you can figure out what event happened and follow the data path in that way. So it's really easy. I've been using libevent lately for the past year or so from Niels Provos. Libevent doesn't have anything other than a clean API, really, that binds you to poll or select or KQ or EPOL. So on the platform that's been compiled on, you're now married with a simple, clean, single API to probably the best solution for that platform and your problem. So you write your code once, and it's very portable. And again, works on OS X, Windows, and Unix as well. So let's talk about PCAP a little bit. It's a simple C library. It's a relatively simple C library, actually. So again, as I just mentioned, it's kind of an event-driven model. So the series of operations are pretty simple. You create a PCAP reader or a writer, depending on what you're doing. But typically for a sniffer, you're going to create a PCAP reader. And this is of a PCAP_T, PCAP type. And within that type are a bunch of different things like what file descriptor is open, the characteristics of the device, the timeout that it's got set, all these crazy things you can access later on. But ultimately, this is what you need to keep referencing to handle packets or to read them essentially. You can set a filter on this as well, a BPF filter. So saying, I only want packets from this network, I only want packets of this type, or even arbitrary combinations of the two of them, right? So I only want ICMP packets from 10/8 or TCP packets from 192.168/16. You can have very complicated filters like that very easily. So you set these filters on this if you want to, you don't have to. And then you iterate basically over the content using one of the three supplied ways to read from it. So PCAP next returns you the next buffer. PCAP loop and PCAP dispatch will sit there and iterate over it repeatedly. And when you're done, you can just destroy it by calling PCAP close on the PCAP T device. And in a nutshell, so that's basically PCAP in a nutshell, right? So once you kind of realize how it works, it's really dead simple to work with it. One of the things you have to keep in mind is, I think it's on Linux, it will actually not return immediately. You can actually sit there and trample over the memory for that's being used to store the packet with the next packet, unless you read it immediately. I think it's on Linux that it does that. So you have to set options to actually return as fast as possible as you can read the full packet and so on and so forth. So little things like that you have to keep in mind depending on the platform that you're on. But in typical fashion, it's actually pretty easy to work with this. So that looks terrible. So very sorry. In a nutshell, you've got this in your main thing here, you've got your PCAP T defined here as a pointer, P in this case. You open a live device in this case, FXP0, and you can see in the interface here. Let's see. So you've got the device, you've got the read timeout in milliseconds of 1500 milliseconds. 1500 bytes, that's the snapshot length of any packet you want to pull up. In this case, I set a promiscuous flag, so saying I want to capture all packets that go by the interface as opposed to just for me. Half a second timeouts, and there's an error buffer at the end there. So if in the open live you get an error, it sticks the error there and it returns an invalid handler for you. And then simply I loop over in the next piece here. I basically loop over them and I call handle for each packet that comes in, and handle is this callback function. There's a callback function up here at the top where I basically pass it parameters describing the PCAP header and the packet itself. And there, obviously, what you can do is, and you can rip apart the packets, you can analyze them, you can print them out, you can react to them, you can do all these things like that. And when it's done, it returns and you can go on to the next packet and so forth. So using callbacks and your event-driven code, you can basically iterate over this content arbitrarily. And so despite the bad display, I hope that's somewhat clear about how that actually works. As I just described there, so using PCAP open live, I'm opening a device, a real device in this case, as opposed to a file. You can actually use PCAP open offline to read a file and again process it that way. PCAP loop reads from the PCAP device, reads a certain number of packets or whatever, and then you can specify a certain count if you want to, and then you call this callback, in this case handle, for each packet, and then you can play with it, and then you destroy it at the end of it when you're done with it, so you don't leave it dangling and open. So that was two or three slides on PCAP, but it really is that easy to start playing with it. The man page is kind of poorly written, but there's a lot of sample code out there. There's a few strange things in there, that are not really well explained, or there's even hidden there's actually even hidden facets of the API that are not on the man page. Really easy to use, really easy to play with. With the PCAP man page and Stevens open at your side, you're basically set to tear apart packets and play with them. All the funny things you see, like an ethereal and stuff like that, and TCP dump that actually print out, you know, this is a DHCP option of a packet that's went by and stuff like that, are basically just people who wrote decode essentially for the binary data and the packets. And so they cast the data, and then they basically tear it apart and print out the options as they come by. Really simple to do, actually. It's not very complicated at all, not even terribly time-consuming. It's just a matter of doing it. So libdnet is, as I mentioned, Doug Song's library for networking. It's a C library, and it contains a number of elements to it. So it has packet construction at the Ethernet layer, at the IP layer, and I think, you know, handles IPv6, TCP, UDP, ICMP, and you can even build in your own construction routines as well. It has tools to write them either at the IP layer, which case it goes to the kernel and it's routed out the right interface, or an arbitrary interface using an Ethernet layer. Let's see, it has tools to open and read and write to the ARP table and print from the ARP table, for example, and manipulate it. Has tools to open and manipulate the routing table, which I'll talk about in a little bit. Basically, you have these accessors, essentially, to the data that's in your networking stack in the kernel. So I mentioned that here. Real briefly, so the idea of raw packets is sort of foreign in a couple of platforms. I think Solaris is one of them, where you actually get cooked packets instead. Some certain options are cooked, meaning that they're filled in from the default in the kernel. So you have to work around them in some platforms and stuff like that. It's annoying, but it's usable in that case. So things like, for example, a default MAC address or things like that, so that come out of it. So I mentioned the difference between link layer and IP layer injection as well. So basically what you do is when you create a packet, you're basically allocating a buffer and you're packing it full of the data that's appropriate. So a source IP address, a destination IP address, a protocol, TTL, all those things like that. And so DNet actually has really simple interfaces to do that. So using these pack interfaces, so pack TCP, pack UDP, pack IP, and stuff like that. Really simple to do, not very hard at all. It's just a simple matter of knowing what to pass it and stuff like that. It's typical to build packets kind of the way that you would think about them leaving you. So you put in your application data, you put in your protocol data, you put in your IP data, and if needed, you put in your Ethernet data and then send it out. Very, very simple to do that. You can do simple little things with DNet, like ARP flutters and stuff like that. You can do SYN flutters. So on and so forth. What gets interesting is when you mix DNet with PCAP, and now you can have like a user land stack, for example. So here you've actually taken the networking stack, turned it off in the kernel, and you do packet reads and writes using PCAP to read them, and loops inside to actually decode them and put them where they belong, and DNet to actually send them, to create them and send them back out. And you can, for example, link this into your arbitrary networking programs and actually have that and replace, connect and send and stuff like that in the kernel and actually do this all in user land. This is actually kind of how Honeydew does it, believe it or not. So Honeydew, the virtual HoneyNet device, does this. It basically creates a user land receive stack as opposed to a connection-based stack. And so you have connections that in a structure inside of it, but it handles it using PCAP as input and DNet as output. So it's one of the neater things you can actually do with it. What is neat about DNet is that if you don't compile out the networking stack of your kernel, you can actually use the firewalling routines within DNet to block all packets going into the actual kernel stack and only go into the user land stack. So you don't send an arbitrary, a spurious reset, for example, for a TCP port that's not open when you receive a TCP SYN to it, things like that. So the kernel would actually screw up your user land stuff. So you have to use the firewalling routines there. But because it's all in the same library, it actually is a very efficient way to do it. So just, for example, block the kernel path for IP input in this case, or IP output. I don't know what happened there. In a nutshell, kind of like PCAP. I'm going to have to explain this, I guess. Kind of like PCAP. Basically, you create a handler. In this case, let's say we're going to write some IP packets. So you do an IP open, and you get back an IP handler. And then you build packets, and then using, for example, packed TCP. So you specify the TCP options, I think in the order that they actually appear in the header, and then you simply write to to the IP device that you opened before, and then when you're done playing with it, you close it, and so you clean up the resources that are associated with it. Memory management, at least for the IP device, is done for you, but for everything else, you have to do it yourself. You have to malloc, fill it in, and free it on your own, so if you don't want leaks and stuff like that, or the code getting messed up. For ARP, for route, for firewall, things you actually open, you do like an ARP open, you get an ARP handler, you get an ARP device back, firewall open, and route open the same way. You can iterate over them, you can actually inject routes, you can remove routes. He's got structures that are pretty cool. When you look at what Doug's done, it's pretty extensible. You can actually, it makes sense, and he's got some sort of pragmatics to actually make sense in there in terms of how to address them. So I'm sorry I didn't have any code up there. I don't know what happened. But using essentially the same model that you do in PCAP, where you open, you iterate, and then you close, and you're done. Very, very easy, very event-based kind of stuff like that. libnids is kind of the culmination of some interesting work. So I think it was Nurgle who actually came up with it. Basically, he wanted to generate the what's called the E-box for a network intrusion detection system, the event box, which captures events and can present them to you. And his approach is kind of neat. The problem was he wanted to address how to do fragment reassembly, packet reassembly, and streaming assembly in a very efficient manner. So you can spend a lifetime trying to rewrite that and try and handle that, all those exceptions, or you can steal an actual networking stack from something. And so that's exactly what he did. He stole the Linux 2.0.36 stack and put it in user land. So, and then wrapped it around PCAP and wrapped it around, I think, libnet, which is related to DNet but different, as a way to actually collect and store and build these streams of data. So PCAP collects them and then passes them through this stack code, essentially stolen from Linux kernel, and you can now reassemble the streams. And what it does is it actually stores this humongous structure for you that describes the stream. So it's sort of efficient in some ways. And you get a callback. Internally, it's all event-driven. You get a callback that basically says, I've got a TCP stream with these attributes. You can check the attributes. And you can tell the track getter to go ahead and discard it. So upon stream creation, you have to make that decision. If you don't, it's gone. That's fine, because you got to deal with resources most efficiently. But you can actually, then it's also split out in the client half and server half, which is also kind of neat as well. It's a lot more intimidating than it actually looks. It is really simple. Basically, you do a NIDS init, which basically does all the internal setup for you using a bunch of globals. The code's kind of scary, but it's really easy to actually use it. Then you register callback functions for IP, for TCP if you want to, for UDP and stuff like that. And then you use basically NIDS run or NIDS next if you want to have your own loop in this case. And you can actually, one of the neat things you can do about it is you can actually react to sessions. For example, if you see a session that matches some arbitrary criteria, whether it be, for example, SSH traffic on the network or FTP traffic between two specific hosts, you can actually go ahead and kill it, and it will actually inject the right reset values and fins to actually shut down the connection. It's a pretty efficient way of doing that. So you don't have to do all this yourself. Libnids gives you a really simple interface to do it. Just call NIDS kill TCP, and you're all set. I mentioned you can, of course, within the callback, track the streams very, very simply. You get it broken out, so you have like kind of a client struct and a server struct, and you can tear into them. You can check the addresses and stuff like that. It's really simple to do. It also can track multiple hosts at a time, so it actually does the concurrency for you and actually does the associations for you in the actual stack that it has internally. Of course, it's susceptible to certain problems, but most of the time you're not going to see those unless people are actively trying to screw with you. Again, the code looks like ass, but you can see here in main how I set up my NID parameters and stuff like this. So It has one of the neat things that it has built into is a port scan detection system as well. So I shut it off by setting scan num ports to zero. I think the default is 10, where it will actually not try and handle port scan traffic. So if it sees more than 10 ports in use for any one session, it will actually just ignore it. So in this case, I don't want to have it ignore it. I want to try and handle it myself. And the number hosts and hosts here in this case means it wants to actually track no more than 2048 hosts on the network. So that could be 2048 distinct hosts or whatever, you know, one host to 2047 other hosts and stuff like that. I initialize and I register a TCP callback, in this case, monitor TCP, and then I just launch run, NIDS run. And basically, what happens when I call NIDS run is for each TCP stream that happens, it goes actually up to monitor TCP, passes it the stream, and internal to there, now I have to, this is my own code, and monitor, I have to actually evaluate the stream. And one of the things I have to do in there is I have to say, yes, I want to track it, or no, I don't want to track it. But now I have access to the full stream data. I can write out the stream, the connection streams if I want to. I can kill them if I want to, all sorts of things like that. What people typically do with this is they'll actually evaluate the stream data using fast string matching or fast pattern matching. For example, they'll look for known buffer overflow attacks or whatever, which is, you can see how it kind of all leads up towards that e-box, if you will, of a NID system. So you actually get all this data, and you can actually now evaluate it very, very simply. It's done all the reassembly for you to remove the ambiguity on a packet layer. So now I have stream data, which is much better. So if I fragment an attack across multiple streams, or multiple packets rather, the system will hopefully put them back together and reveal what was trying to go on. You had a question?
What form does the struct TCP stream give the data to you? I mean, when does it know that now is the time to call your TCP handler and say this is the chunk of data that you've got?
So the question is, sounds like there's actually two questions there. So the first is, how does it know to call the function I registered for monitor TCP? Is that correct?
Sure.
Which is really simply look for packets matching connection establishment in TCP. So if you are monitoring, if you fire this up on their established TCP streams, where you're seeing, but you don't actually see the three-way handshake to establish the connection, it won't monitor ones that are existing currently. It actually goes through the TCP state diagram itself. So it has to watch the setup and stuff like that, which has a consequence such that if you're not able to watch the entire three-way handshake, it's gone. You don't get it. So you have to handle that yourself. You have to put it in an interesting place, essentially. Right.
I mean, if they write to more data on the other side, how does it packetize the TCP stream?
Packetize?
Or does it packetize?
Not really. So basically, it takes the data out of the packets. So the question is, how does it packetize the stream? I'm not quite sure if I get the turns.
The right question.
I think it's more like if the TCP stream is sending, you know, a 30 meg file over the network,
mm-hmm.
How does libnids know when to fire your handler, and does it give you like the entire 30 meg buffer? Is that
Ah. So okay, so that's sure. Upon TCP connection establishment. So the question is, how does it know when to call it and when at the, you know, in the case of say 30 meg file transfer, does it at the end of it, does it do that, or is it the start of it?
Yeah.
Right.
Does it give it the entire 30 megs, or do you only get a portion of it?
Right. So two or three things in there. So the first is it calls the TCP callback function at the session establishment, not at the session closure or not in the middle of it, but the session establishment, and not at the first packet either, right? So three-wish handshake has to actually go through. So it does all the sequence number tracking for you, and it's basically like a passive TCP stack, right? So it is exactly how a Linux 2036 kernel would handle a TCP connection establishment, which is to say it watches the three-way handshake. Obviously, it's not participating in either endpoint, but it assumes that if it were, essentially, it would have established, set up a TCP established state for that connection.
Okay.
At that point, it hands you over to your callback function for TCP that you registered with register TCP, right? In this case, it's monitor TCP. For each packet that comes in matching that TCP connection base, the TCB, which is a kernel struct which describes the tuples that they're associated with each kernel pair or each connection pair, it puts the packet data into that into the stream for that connection. It chooses if it's client or server on the basis of the heuristics of source IP and source port to desk IP and desk port, and if that matches the client or server in the connection that was established in the that is listed in the TCP connection base. So you get this actually piecemeal as you go along. In the case of a very large file transfer, you actually get this piecemeal connection. And so each time it adds to it, you know, it calls monitor TCP, right? So you can actually, so using those events, each packet coming as an event and adding to that, you actually get to play with it. So in this case, what's good about that is that you, if you're doing, say, pattern matching, looking for a known attack, for example, in the case of an IDS, or just something that you want to shut down for whatever reason, or just want to monitor for whatever reason, if it's sending character at a time or byte at a time or something like that, you can actually, if somebody fragments it, set their MCU so low that it's sending a byte at a time, essentially, in each data portion, and it would take, you know, like 40 packets or whatever to match a pattern, until the 40th one comes in, you're still monitoring that, and then at some point you get a match, in theory, right?
Are you responsible for maintaining all those 40 bytes that you received on your own?
No. So it does the stream reassembly for you. You're not responsible for maintaining those on your own. It actually does the stream reassembly for you. So that's why it hands you a struct stream as opposed to a packet. So it actually appends to the stream. It increments the counters of, you know, this is the last sequence number I saw, this is the last ACK number I saw for this, here's how many packets I've seen, here's how many bytes I've seen, and then here's an unsigned CAR buffer that describes the contents of that. And to keep it from basically blowing up, it would actually, I think it's like, I think it's a few K. I think it can be bumped up, but by default, I think it's pretty reasonable. It won't actually collect the whole 30 meg file if you're doing a file transfer. You can, I think, tell it to try and do that, which is kind of crazy in some situations, unless you're prepared to handle it. But in general, to keep it from blowing up, it truncates after a certain point. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Cool.
Does it split apart the two directions into different?
Yeah, so the question is, does it split the client and server connection pieces? And yes, it does, actually. So you don't get this kind of massive overlap of just data back and forth. You know, you get a stream that describes the client, you get and what the client said, and you get a stream that describes what the server said, so you can react to one or the other, or both, if you want to.
So you can follow the whole thing?
You can definitely follow the whole thing. So what's great about it is, you know, so you can actually do this with PCAP and all your own massaging and stuff like that, right? And throw some DNet in there to actually do the kill and stuff like that if you want to. Or you can actually just call this, which is much easier. It's not perfect. You might be able to do better, right? It is a few years old at this point, and stacks have gotten better since then. But it's kind of easy. It's kind of an easy way to actually get that kind of data out of it. So I think this is actually the last big slide here. So I'm happy to answer any more questions about these tools or anything else kind of related. Lorene?
Can you talk to the difference between libdnet and libnet?
So the question is, what is the difference between libdnet and libnet? Brief history lesson. So Rout wrote libnet and released 1.0, and it had a relatively simple API for basic packet construction. Libnet build TCP, and build IPv4 and all this kind of stuff, build ICMP and stuff like that. It also had a lot of really cool handlers to build very specific kinds of packets. So, for example, if you wanted to build an OSPF hello packet, you had a handler that would actually build that packet for you with the rest of the parameters filled in, stuff like that. Very easy way to do it. Kind of the opposite of decoding that, essentially. There are some great things about it. It was the first of its kind, a portable network write library to come along, kind of a complement to PCAP. It had a lot of good things going for it, and it had a lot of things that weren't so good in it. between some of its limitations and some of its complexities as an API and some of its failings as an API, as well as some of the other things you can do with a networking library, like manipulate the route table, manipulate the firewall table, ARP table, and kind of a simpler API, and kind of a structural and kind of a programming methodology that suits some people better. LibDNet came about from Doug Song. So LibDNet is actually some of his code ripped out from tools like dsniff and other tools like that, like macOS and stuff like that and other things, kind of gave some of the pieces back to it. Some new code as well. But in general, it's just trying to be kind of a simple API. LibNet 1.1 still is only a packet construction library, packet construction writing library. It's not doing any other network layer manipulation, but the API has gotten significantly more complex. It has new memory managers thrown in there, like an arena memory manager, so which is much more efficient than and pool management as well, which is much more efficient than mallocing all each and every damn time. But in general, the API has gotten kind of unwieldy. So in general, it's a simpler API. LibDNet is a simpler API with a lot more features thrown in for lower level networking access as well. Make sense? Okay. Yes.
Is LibNet as bad as X11 yet?
Is LibNet as bad as X11? No, it's pretty much where I think XT is, the X toolkit. Not quite raw X11, but it's getting there. Yes?
Can you talk a little more about the sticky widget with PCAP? You mentioned that you didn't
read right
away and actually
able
to write something in memory. You were talking about the
PCAP. Do you
want to
do that?
The last time I looked at libpcap, it just opens up a raw socket and then uses the, it binds it, but they have the packet mmap buffers, and I don't think PCAP uses those, but if it did, then that would be a problem. Because with the mmap buffers, you have to, you've got numerous different buffers, the kernel will fill it until it gets to the end, and then it will cycle back. So you have to constantly move which buffer the kernel is writing. And so that might
I think that's the origin of the problem, right? So it has a fixed buffer. I think it's more or less a ring buffer, right?
Well, that's only for the mmap.
Right. But in general, it has a fixed area for packet storage, and it will just basically keep clobbering it. It doesn't care because, you know, it's up to you to handle it. The problem is it doesn't return from that. It doesn't return from that read until it's satisfied. I think that it's full or some timer happens, which is not based on just an arbitrary packet coming in. There is a new PCAP 0.8 and beyond. There's a new interface, set non block and get non block. Get non block just queries the status, and set non block tells you go into non blocking mode, which says when you get something that fills it, return immediately, so that I can process it without worrying that it's been clobbered. In any case, you can also call an IO coddle on the file descriptor itself to call non-blocking mode and return immediately. But this is just does it for you in the API in a standard way as well. That's the origin of the problem, though, is that it doesn't return immediately and clobbers memory until it's satisfied.
Just wanted to mention that with the regular system, it's just a regular read call, and it does finish at the end of each packet.
Okay.
So in that case, if you're mallocing your RAM,
right, sure. It's some screwy stuff, though, right? So, but be aware if you start seeing screwy kind of behavior that you didn't expect, try setting an immediate return on PCAP. It's probably a good idea anyhow, right? Just to not have to worry about it ever again. But it's caught a few people in the ass, including Marty Roche, who wrote Snort and stuff like that. So recently, he's rewriting some code and got some screwy results. Any other questions? Thank you very, very much for dealing with my rambling and coming late and stuff like that. I really, really appreciate it. I hope this isn't somewhat interesting, and I'm sorry it's, like I said, kind of scatterbrained and stuff like that. So thank you very much.